And you are tuned in to KPFT 90.1 HD3. The show is Welton Sean. I'm your host, Mike DeLeonardis. And from biomechanical devices, biobots, which interestingly enough, have as a component of their construction a particular sort of, fabrication that relies on a sort of manufacturing process not too dissimilar of the manufacturing process of, microelectronics. And so it's an interesting segue into our next topic of MEMS, which stands for microelectromechanical systems. And I caught something a couple of weeks ago that has developed a lot of excitement in the media, as well as the scientific community, regarding micro windmills and energy generation. And we're going to explore this area, this new area of MEMS, MEMS, microelectromechanical systems, and to help me and to help us understand this a little bit better is my next guest, J.C. Chow, professor of electromechanical and bioengineering at UT Southwestern and UT Arlington. And it's my great pleasure to welcome you, J.C., to the show. And why don't you start off and tell us exactly what microelectromechanical systems are and, how they're made in a sort of general sense?
Yes. Hi, Mike.
It's great to have you on.
Great. Thank you. It's my honor and my pleasure to speak here. My title is professor of electrical engineering at University of Texas at Arlington, and my research for the past 15 years has been focused on MEMS fabrication, and we target biomedical applications. The MEMS stand for micro electro mechanical system. Micro means small, so they are very small, and the usual size is smaller than the diameter of a human hair. Electro means electrical, so they can be controlled by electrical signal, such as a computer or cell phone. Mechanical means they are movable; they can move or be moved. Usually, they are three-dimensional structure. And S is not plural. S means system, and system means integration. So usually, in a MEMS device, it will include some sort of a sensing mechanism and actuation mechanism. That means that the device can sense the environment and do something. And usually they are integrated with integrated circuits, with software, with firmware, as an intelligent identity. MEMS device, although sounds new, but is actually not. Let me give you two examples that we use every day with MEMS device. And I bet every one of the audience out there has MEMS device right now. One is airbag sensor. when you are driving, there's an airbag sensor or several of them in your car. The airbag sensor is a MEMS device that can sense sudden acceleration. Another one is a gyroscope, MEMS gyroscope, or something we call accelerometer in your smartphone. So when you change the orientation in your smartphone, you rotate it, you want to read it differently, and the screen will change with the orientation of your iPhone or your iPad. And that's because inside the iPhone or iPad or smartphone, there's a MEMS device that can sense the orientation of the device. So MEMS device has been made it to our daily life.
Yeah, and it's, I guess it's been in practical use for, has it been the last decade or the last couple of decades that this has began to come into general usage?
I would say last decade, because the reason I was in this research field is that when I graduated from college, from National Taiwan University in 1988, I read an article in Time magazine, and the cover story is about a MEMS device that is so small you can fit a red blood cell into a rotor and examine each red blood cell. So from then, I developed an interest into the MEMS device field. So when I was studying for my PhD, I used a MEMS device for radio frequency system. So I think of the MEMS device, after about 10 years of study in the research field, and suddenly, because they are so unique and provide a novel functionality, they start making into the practical application. Many people said the next big application is the pressure sensor in the tire of your car. So in the future, inside the tire, there will be multiple sensor that can sense your tire pressure continuously and in real time. Many MEMS devices now make their application into medical application. For example, making small surgical tool, and that can operate on vessel or nerves directly. So I think MEMS now is ready into practical and cost-effective application.
Yeah, and, you know, when I think about how these things are manufactured, I always go back to microelectronics and integrated circuits and think, well, you know, very limited understanding of this is that it's made through a process called photolithography and etching, and that's I understand that's how MEMS are created. And I was wondering if you could just spend a couple of minutes describing that fabrication process, if you will.
That's a great thing about MEMS device, because the fabrication and manufacturing process didn't really start from scratch. They utilize, most of the researchers utilize the existing manufacturing process. The photolithography process for integrated circuit is making a multi-layer of material on a single wafer. Wafer is like a carrier, usually is silicon, and the integrated circuit fabrication deposit multiple layer of material, such as silicon and silicon dioxide, and also metal, like making a cake, layer by layer by layer. The major difference between integrated circuit and MEMS device is in MEMS device because eventually we want to make it a three-dimensional mechanical structure. So when we are deposit material, we will purposely deposit some material that can be sacrificed. And those sacrifice material is called sacrificial layer. The sacrificial layer is there to occupy space. But in the end of the process, the whole chip, the whole wafer, will be dipped into something that can etch away those sacrificial layer. The sacrificial layer, currently most of them are using silicon dioxide, which is glass. And if you put it into HF solution, hydrofluoric acid solution, then the glass will be etched away. After the sacrificial layer is removed, there will be space among silicon structure that make the silicon structure start to move. That's how you make the movable devices on top of the silicon wafer.
Yeah.
And now the scientists and researchers are exploring multiple material. For example, like us, we are using metal on metal. So we use one metal as the sacrificial layer and the other metal as the structure layer. Some people using polymer, which is plastic, using one polymer as sacrificial layer, the other polymer as mechanical structure. And this way, now we can vary the device characteristics using different material. And the creativity now, of course, is unlimited. Many people are trying, many researchers are trying to put together multiple material and multiple structure to make the devices more complicated and more integrated.
Yes, and you know, the fascinating thing that brought me to you was reading a little synopsis of a recent discovery that was in your lab regarding micro windmills and energy generation. And I was thinking, wow, I mean, this has a lot of potential, especially for portable energy generation, as exemplified in that article regarding using micro windmills to generate cell phones. And I could expand on that. Because it, to my fault or to the fault of those who designed those huge windmills that, you know, create wind power and stuff, and we have a lot out in West Texas, as you know, and I was thinking, how can you make this portable? How could you, like, say, develop this to put it in millions of tiny windmills, to put it in any sort of device, let's say like a car, like a solar powered and now wind powered vehicle that, as you're, you know, let's say a scenario, as you're driving down the road and you're being powered not only, let's say, by solar cells on top of the roof, but let's say by also wind power generated, let's say, as the aerodynamics of the wind swoop down on the back of your car and come back through the trunk like a spoiler, so to speak, and feed into a sort of a grid or I guess, yeah, multi-layered grid of these windmills that catch the wind coming out of the back of that. And you've got the potential for some pretty significant energy generation on the road and making it quite portable.
We thought about the windmill, micro-scale windmill idea, was that from a thought I had a long time ago, is that can we integrate the windmill on the integrated circuit? If we do, then they might have a lot of application. Our purpose is not to replace the giant windmill that can harvest a lot of energy to power up air conditioner or refrigerator. our micro windmill can never do that. On the contrary, the reason we are thinking about small is, can we borrow the low-cost manufacturing process to make many of them? Because when they are small, they can be make thousands or if not millions of them with a low-cost price.
Yeah.
So we are trying to reduce the price in order to make the windmill become a more affordable solution for almost every house, every person, per se.
Yes, yes. Price parity, so to speak. Bringing
yes.
the price of alternative energy down to or below the price of fossil fuels.
Yes. Also, we are also thinking that this device can be used on portable electronics or remote sensor. And in those applications, the price really is a key point. If you are going to put the environmental monitor everywhere around the house, building, bridges, airplane, cars, you need to have a power source that is cost effective.
Mm.
For now, America is suffering for infrastructure degradation, and we need to monitor our highway,
yes.
monitor roads, monitor bridges.
Yes.
And it's very costly to put electricity to those places. So if we can integrate a solar panel with a wind turbine into a very small cost-effective sensor in order to continuously monitor those structures, then that can save a lot of money.
Yes, very important point as far as monitoring infrastructure, and especially, you know, within the recent things that have happened in the last three or couple of years regarding bridges. That is a very important point to put out there. And not, you know, this is another one of these beautiful things that is like a seed in the sense that it is has a broad number of applications that we haven't even begun to think about, not only in energy and biotechnology, which unfortunately we neglected to mention because of the short amount of time, but a whole number of ideas with regarding monitoring infrastructure and buildings and integrating that into the architecture.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's unfortunate that we have run out of time. I think, you know, we've got just about of a minute left, and I would leave that to you to put out any sort of closing thoughts or anything, any sort of message that you want to put out there.
I'm very honored you invited me, give me a chance to chat with you. And I think in a university, a lot of time we are working on fundamental science, physics, and we didn't have a chance to talk to the public, to make the society learn about what we are doing. And so I really appreciate this great opportunity that we have a chance to express our research topic to the general public. And also, by the way, that I have a lot of high school students working in my lab, so it's not probably, most of people think that university research is only for PhD, and a lot of high school students actually working in my lab on their project. So I think I would take this chance to tell the audience that if you have some new ideas, and if you have children who is interested in science and engineering, don't hesitate and pick up the phone or send an email to university professor. A lot of professors are welcome students to come and learn, do more science projects.
Very important point, because, you know, science moves forward, and we need to endow the next generation with the new ideas that are coming up and let them expand on it. And, JC, it's been my pleasure having you on today. And, you know, we got to have you on again for further discussion. Hope you'll come on again.
Oh, sure. Yes, anytime. And thank you very much for this opportunity.
And thank you for coming on. And we will see you sometime in the future.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.